Well, welcome to this shortened after-hours show. I knew and have known Pat Reardon as a man, as a grown-up man, as one of the most talented reporter writers in the history of the Tribune. I avidly read his stuff, and we once collaborated on a wonderful, wonderful story about the Gold Coast, where I got to know him a little better. I did not and would never dare presume to know Pat Reardon as a baby. I do now, after reading his book, Puddin', an autobiography of a baby, a memoir in prose poems. Pat, welcome to the show, and I've got to tell you, I have never read a book like this, and I've read tens of thousands of them. It is unique, it is heartfelt, it is remarkable, in a word. Congratulations.
Well, thank you very much, Rick. I'm astounded by how well you have gotten the book, you know, and how you you see it as for what it is, which is something really really different, a different take on babies and on, you know, on people.
Yes. Yes. One of the things, not only do I feel that way, but the book is published by the remarkable Chicago Treasure Third World Press, which is run by Haki Matabuti, himself a talented writer and poet. He writes in a foreword to this short but immensely powerful book, calls it an exploratory wonderment of the first year of life. Writing as one's infant self is not only a first in poetry, most probably a first in book form. He asks a question that I am now going to steal from him and ask Pat Reardon. How in the hell did you come up with an idea like this, Pat?
Well, there's two parts to that answer. One is, I have been watching babies. Well, first of all, I was a baby.
The oldest.
Secondly,
of
I've been watching.
Well, the oldest of 14 kids.
14, yeah. Right. So I've been watching babies for 72 years from the time my brother David arrived,
mm-hmm.
And I was a year old, and then there were all the 13 others. I mean, altogether 13 others. And then
your own children.
My own two kids. And now my own two grandchildren, plus a third about to be born, like, scheduled Tuesday, and all my nieces and nephews. I've watched babies. So I'm really surprised at how the reactions of some people about you mean babies think? It's like, yeah, you know,
yeah, they
when
have
you watch
to.
A baby.
They have to, or they just lie and cry, I think.
Right, exactly. And if you watch a baby, babies will be curious, babies will be, you know, they'll have moods, they'll have all this stuff. So anyway, that's the one aspect. The other aspect was after my brother David, when he was 64, he committed suicide, and mm-hmm. that was really shocking, but it also wasn't. He'd had a real painful life.
Sounds it.
And so when he did this, I went back into therapy, and as part of my own stuff outside of the therapeutic sessions with my therapist, I started writing down stuff about what it was like for me as a baby, because it wasn't just about the troubles he had.
Sure.
I was able to relate to his troubles because I had a lot of the same kind of experiences that he did.
I remember, so Pat, reading, I think, refresh my memory, there were some poems about David in that wonderful book. I think you may have been on the show talking about it.
Requiem
for David,
David, yes.
Published in 2017. Part of your repertorial exploration, and that is what I'm calling it here, because yes, it is a work of fiction, but I find it grounded in reportage too. Am I wrong?
Oh, no, absolutely. In fact, I have the afterword where I talk about how I use certain things like photographs
mm-hmm.
to try to put myself back in the moment and re-feel it, you know, to
mm-hmm.
feel it again.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I was taking not just the photographs, but also my knowledge of David and myself and my siblings and the various ways in which we were shaped by our parents. And the key question, or the key comment that people would say in the family, they'd admit that our parents weren't real touchy-feely kind
right,
of people.
Right, right, right.
But they would say, well, how could you be with so many kids? Well, I started thinking, well, wait a minute.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went back mm-hmm. to where I was the only kid, so they didn't have a lot of... They didn't have other kids, and have other kids with
David. We should mention, too, that your father, you know, talk about demanding. I mean, I can't even imagine the demands on your mom, but your father was a cop, too, and so okay. he would have a day of various, sometimes emotional, sometimes physical demands before mm-hmm. he came home. I must tell you, Pat Puddin, again, is the title, Puddin apostrophe, which was a nickname given to you by your aunt, I came to respect your parents in this book. I don't know if that was your intention, but you do. Here's one, and it is 110 very, very short prose poems. This is from January 6th, 1950. Here he is. He keeps his space. He looks to her. He has that frown. He has that line to his mouth. He does not like to look at me. His hands are large. They move me with ease. He smiles when she is here. He makes jokes. He flies me bare through the air. The breeze is cold on my skin. I pee. They laugh. That should give you, ladies and gentlemen, some sample of Pat Reardon's writing in Puddin. We have to take a short break and come back. There are a million questions I have for Pat. This is not the first time he will be on this show talking about this book, but we'll be right back. Pat Reardon's new book is titled Puddin, Puddin apostrophe, the autobiography of a baby, a memoir in prose poems. It is as beautiful, moving, and stunning a book as I can remember reading, and it is unique. How difficult, Pat, was it to write this book? I'm not just saying emotionally, because that's obvious, but stylistically. When did you decide? Go ahead.
Well, here's I started writing these. I would leave therapy and go to Einstein's Bagels, and I would sit there and write on the brown paper napkins while I was eating a bagel. And so I was trying to put myself back in that place. And so I wrote, one or two, and then I wrote three or four or five or six. And I looked at him and realized that I was, in order to get the voice of the baby, I was using mainly one-syllable words.
Yep.
So when I typed them up, I started replacing. I started using only one syllable words. So there, it's all one syllable words all the way through, except for the word Puddin, which was the nickname my aunt gave me, and then the name David, who was my brother who was born
when he was
on
born.
The last. So
let me ask you too.
Go ahead.
You pick. You didn't have many, something in the neighborhood of, I think, 40 black and white photos for reference. And you do write in the afterword that in none of these photos were you and or your brother smiling, as many baby pictures are. That was basically your material. Your parents are long dead. And I don't think you certainly couldn't go to David. So you were, in a sense, kind of on your own, trying to commune as a reporter with these pictures and find a meaning deeper than just the image. Yeah,
right. Yeah, exactly. But also, if you look at your own life and you think of how you what was my relation with my parents going mm-hmm. back to when I was 30, when I was 15, when I was 7. In other words, go back as far as I could, and all of these things were there. And so I extrapolated to jump back to the babyhood because if I had felt like there was this one, these great years, and then suddenly everybody else showed up, all the other kids, and
get out of here.
But I didn't have that feeling. I really enjoyed each of the kids coming in, and that's what what was that's part of what's so disconcerting about this is, you know, that I found the new babies coming in to be delightful, and all of the kids, the older kids, were delighted with the younger kids. So
sure,
if you were the seventh born, you had six older kids who really, really liked looking at you.
Some of the stuff here is to me, it was at the same time chilling and heartbreaking, but very enlightening. Here we have back-to-back chapters, and by chapter I mean, you know, a few words. Here is number six, February 13th, 1950, and Pat, as a baby, writes, "In the dark, in their bed in their room, they make sounds that scare me." Sit on that for a while, ladies and gentlemen. Then the very next chapter, chapter 7, which takes place almost a month later on March 7th, "She moves chairs and all the rest. She talks to me as if I am her. I can tell she is mad about what he said last night as they sat in their chairs at the meal. She moves lamps and stands. She moves the couch. She makes a new room. Her breath is hard in her chest, and there is sweat on her dress as she stands still to look at her work. She lights a smoke. She sits in a chair. She cries." That's really amazing writing, Pat. I cannot imagine, maybe I'm wrong, but most of these chapters came to you full-blown. There must have been some rewriting here and there, yes?
Basically, I'm sitting there, and because all my life I watched my mother change furniture.
Yep.
This was kind of one of her default things to feel better.
Mm.
You know, when she'd be blue, she would move furniture around.
Oh.
So I think with that one and the one you read about my father, I am kind of channeling their own feelings as well.
Sure.
Because, you know, it's my mother, you know, was someone who had a hard time, had a lot of anxieties, you know,
Also 13
get expressed this way.
13 children would do that to you. There are other remarkably buoyant parts of the book. I'm not trying to make this seem like a terror story. There are buoyant parts. I loved May 30th, 1950, when I think it is the first, when doctors visited people at home, you were visited by a doctor. That is charming. June 3rd, 1950 is, I believe, could be your first trip to a park. And I love that. You also traveled to a tavern with your dad.
Which I
also, of course, me, Pat, I adore.
Yeah.
And there are fights and there are makeups. And on October 12th, 1950, Pat Reardon, as a baby, writes, "In my crib, I make sounds in my mouth in a soft way. I hear the sounds in my head. I try to match the sounds that I have stored there. They're words. I hear the sound food in my head, but do not know how to make my mouth make the sound. She says words to me and leaves the room." I just so adore that. I so adore that. I do think that one comes out of this book, as I did, unable, I think, Pat, to ever look at a baby in the same way again. I'll tell you that. And if not to interrogate every baby I see, say, "What are you thinking? What are you thinking?"
Right, yeah. Right.
That must be some of the response you've gotten. I know you've done a few talks.
Oh, absolutely!
Yeah.
I'm amazed at the. I'm not amazed because I think this is. I think I'm saying something really interesting.
And no question.
I have people who just love it because it does kind of give you a glimpse of the world from someone else's perspective.
Yeah.
That you don't get, you know. I mean, you don't. I'm looking at the picture on my screensaver, and it's me holding my grandson Ulysses, who is like 7 months old, and he's got this huge smile on his face. But he's at this point in his life starting to try to make sounds. So the fact that, I mean, what you read is what he's going through now at this moment in his life. So if you look at these kids, you see them, you know, working at it.
What did this book, writing this book, what did it teach you? I don't know if teach is the right word, Pat Reardon. What did you learn about yourself in writing this remarkable, again, I will say remarkable book?
I think that I found that my baby experience was immensely complex, yep, and that it includes not just my feelings, but my parents' feelings. And my feelings had to do with how they were treating me or how they were dealing with me, and to what extent they weren't dealing with,
sure,
me. But it also had to deal with who are they, what do they feel like, you know, why are they the way they are?
Mm-hmm.
And they had one of the great love affairs of the world, and my dad would come in from work and he would take my mother and bend her back like in a movie. That's the only time he would ever act that kind of over the top. But that was their relationship with each other was so core to who they were. And so as you read the one thing of me kind of hearing them from the other room.
Right.
You know, it was my life is not just mine, but it's also their lives,
their
as
life.
Well as my aunt.
Sure.
You know?
Oh yeah. And your grandmother.
I realized how deep she was how deeply important she was to me.
And your grandmother's in the book. And again, there's a visit. Pat Reardon's first visit to a neighborhood tavern. One of the things that we both love about this city. There have been all manner of other writers saying great things about the book. Charlie Dickinson, who's a friend of both of ours, says Pat Reardon brings his repertorial skills and clear writing style to the challenges of world through a baby's eyes. You will take Puddin into your arms and into your heart, which will be broken and made whole again over and over as you read his story. And then when you read the story behind it, you also in the book, I love the way there's not a light motif, but there's always this little brown box, which is a radio that your mom listens to.
Yeah, you know, for a baby, for me,
yes,
you know, I wouldn't know that it's called a radio, even if I heard the words.
Of course.
And also radio has two syllables, so I had to avoid that. But, you know, it's a box where there's something coming out.
It
makes my mother feel real good, and it makes me feel good.
I love the references to it. I also love the reference how you describe a newspaper, because a newspaper is more than one syllable, as sheets filled with words. Sheets full of words. Sheets full of words. Pat, it's a remarkable book. Do come on the show when I'm back at full strength. Come in the studio and
sure.
We'll talk more about it. I am so grabbed by this. Again, the title is Puddin, Puddin. It is, you will be able to read it in an hour, and it will change your life in ways small and perhaps even large. Pat, it's an amazing accomplishment, and I'm not my place to be proud of you, but wow. Wow. I'll give you a call and you come back on and we'll do it for an hour. Okay?
Absolutely.
Because I like reading.
Whenever you're ready.
I like reading these chapters. Maybe I was born to be a
poet reader.
A baby poet reader. Pat, take care of yourself and love to the family.
Okay,
take care.
Thank you. You too.
Coming up, Blackhawks, ladies and gentlemen. I will be, I think, at full strength next week. So take care of yourselves this week. And one last... Lynn Bramer died, as Mr. Ruxton told you, and you can read about it in tomorrow's Tribune.